This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A Toronto man is killed with a crossbow. President Obama takes a surprise trip to Afghanistan.
I'm sorry, did you say Buck Owens took a surprise trip to Afghanistan?
No, Barack Obama.
Damn!
And the perfect town of Celebration, Florida, is the scene of murder.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, December 3rd, 2010. Police have made an arrest in the crossbow slaying of a man in a library in Toronto's East End. The shooting happened about 4:30 p.m. yesterday at the Main Street Library, just south of Girard Street East. The man was pronounced dead at the scene after being struck down by a crossbow projectile known as a bolt.
Don't take books out of the reference section!
A bolt is shorter than an arrow, but can be much heavier.
Is this like a whole catapult trebuchet thing, where I ought to know the difference, because, like, in case I ever have to fight a Valkyrie?
Yes.
Okay.
Witnesses told CBC's Jermaine Hilton they saw two men approach the man, who was sitting on a bench, and then pepper spray him. He was then shot, either in the face or the back. Police officers saw a man run north after the shooting. He jumped into a U-Haul rental truck and drove off. Police tracked the truck, found it in the East End Scarborough District, and arrested the driver. It was still unclear exactly what sparked the incident. The motivation behind the killing is certainly a major factor here.
Or, you know, how a guy managed to just walk into a library with a crossbow, bolt, and nobody said, like, hey, hang on, can we check that for you up here?
Linus Smith was sitting in a restaurant across the street when a man came out of the library with something in his hand. I guess, I'm assuming the crossbow, got into the U-Haul truck and drove off. She said another man came out of the library and took down the license number of the truck as it left. The driver, she said, came out of the library. He was calm. He went into the U-Haul and drove up. He didn't speed off or anything. He just drove.
Okay.
So those living in an apartment building this library were not being allowed into their residences yesterday. I guess ostensibly in case the guy was running crazy, he had decided to return to the neighborhood and run around with a crossbow shooting random people.
The neighborhood's resident Red Sonja enthusiast. Here's the thing about that. I know that there's a lot of debate. We had this yesterday, and I don't know about you, but I just got more than any single thing we discussed yesterday. I got all this email about the gun laws and the gun registration and, you know, gun organizations and whatever, you know, and that's I get that. But it seems like rather than being concerned about who's buying a gun, we really ought to be concerned about who's buying a crossbow. Because I think if you were to look at some sort of a, if you were to take the percentage of people who own guns, who then engage in crimes with them, versus the number of people who go out and find a crossbow and then engage in crimes with them, I'm guessing it's like 50% higher for the crossbow enthusiasts. I'm thinking a larger percentage, relatively, per capita. I'm thinking a larger percentage of people with a crossbow or like a mace. You'd probably go out and do some sort of evil with it.
See, I have no idea how many people actually own crossbows. Perhaps it's just that you notice it more when someone commits a crime with a crossbow. We've become sort of blasé about people committing crimes with guns. But when you hear about a crossbow crime, because I'm sure there are many, many people who have crossbows.
Legal crossbow, and they use them for hunting.
I guess.
Yes.
I don't, or target
yes, they're
shooting.
Just, they're just collectors, Don.
Well,
like anything else, like stamps, like matchbooks.
I have no idea why someone would own a crossbow other than the fact that they seem like they'd be fun. But honestly, you know, I find it hard to imagine a lot of criminals think to themselves, ah, yes, a crossbow is the tool I need to rob the 7-Eleven.
No, but see, you're looking at it the wrong way. I'm not saying a lot of criminals say, I got to get a crossbow. I'm saying a lot of people with crossbows use them for something bad. Hmm. See, that's what I'm saying. It's a relative proportion I'm talking about here.
So you're saying that the mind of the person who would be a crossbow owner...
That's what I'm saying.
It is the kind of person who is naturally inclined... To be a ne'er-do-well of some sort.
I'm just saying, if you were going to put me in a room with, like, five randomly selected gun owners, or in a room with five randomly selected crossbow enthusiasts, I'm going to be more nervous in the second room than the first.
Well, okay, I can see your point.
See, that's what I'm talking about right there. I'm not saying if you have, you know, I'm not saying the crossbow itself is bad in some way. It's just a proportional thing to me.
Because when you say a room full of crossbow enthusiasts, I just think of, like hillbillies in overalls and guys who look like Ted Nugent.
Uh-huh. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, December 3rd, 2010. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news, science on the march, and so forth. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemerson.com. If you want to get this program via iTunes, you can do that as well. And it's also available as a direct MP3 download here or Legion of News. .com later on in the day, as well as on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
The Walt Disney Company's perfect subdivision of Celebration, Florida, has experienced two crimes in less than a week. Robbing a Disney Company, robbing the 14-year-old subdivision of its idyllic veneer. I was confused by the way this
is. Is there a big market for idyllic veneers now? Is that a thing you can pawn for considerable amounts of drug money?
There was at one time, I guess.
How much can I get for this idyllic veneer? I don't know. I could go 75, maybe 80.
Have you ever actually seen photos of the Celebration, Florida?
No.
Did you see the Truman Show?
Yes.
They actually shot the parts of the Truman Show in Celebration, Florida.
That makes a lot of sense.
It was a completely engineered and designed community. It's about 10 minutes from Disney World. A lot of people who were like Disney enthusiasts purchased homes there, and also people who wanted something that would be brand new and shiny and clean and low in crime and traffic, because it's the whole thing was designed so that you can walk everywhere. There's a central square with a gazebo, like a bandstand, so you can have old-fashioned picnics like in the olden days. All the houses, and there are super, super strict rules about the color you can paint your house and the size of your picket fence and what you can plant in your front yards. It's a creepy, weird Stepford Wives kind of a place.
I was going to say, it's like a bizarre sort of imagineered kind of Stepford.
Yes.
Okay.
For the first time in 14 years, they've been having a crime wave of two crimes.
That's pretty great.
Over Thanksgiving weekend, Matteo Patrick Giovendito, a 58-year-old teacher, was found murdered in his condo near the town square ice rink.
By the way, I should clarify that, you know, I'm not rooting for the death of Matteo. What was his name?
Matteo Patrick Giovendito.
Giovendito. Sure, he's a nice guy, missed by his friends and loved ones. I'm just saying, if you accept the proposition that there's got to be crime, writer's got to write, killer's got to kill. And so if there's going to be crime, like if you can't avoid that fact, and it seems like you cannot, if you can't get around the fact there's going to be some maimings happening, and therefore it's just a question of where, I'm picking a town run and operated by Disney.
Well, then on Thursday night, SWAT teams were drawn into a standoff with a despondent man who had lost his job. The town's horse and carriage rides ground to a halt as police tried to coax the man from his white picket-fenced home following a domestic dispute. The recent unrest underscores the cracks emerging in the subdivision as house prices plummet and the recession takes its toll. Still, some residents, like this person, believe that it's a good place to live.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just was so enraptured by the story. I'm just picturing like in a bandstand, like in the town square by the gazebo, where they're just playing Taps or the Alfred Hitchcock theme or something. What cut is this?
Disney one.
Disney one. Hold on a second.
Wait for it. Nah, my computer's locking up on me here.
He thinks it's a good place to live.
We'll have to. I'm getting the spinning. The spinning ball. We'll revisit
it
in mere moments.
We'll revisit this later.
There's no way we can't not revisit this.
We'll revisit in the next hour. I will say that one resident, Jim Zimmer of Celebration, said that they're all trying to still keep up appearances in town for our own property values. He says we need the illusion.
Really, that just says so much about not just that town. It really is, in that way, it's the most American city there is, you know? Have you ever actually gone there, or have you just sort of seen photos of it?
But I remember when they were... I was really fascinated by this place when they were building it 14 years ago. There were a lot of magazine articles about it with lots of pictures. And then when people started actually buying the houses and moving in... And,
is it an expensive place to live?
I don't think it's actually that expensive. It was just one of those things, though, where... I think you had to, like, apply and be screened by a committee.
It wasn't like just anybody was allowed to live in. What is it called? Imagination?
Celebration.
Celebration.
And the houses are all... And like I said, if you've seen the Truman Show, the houses are all kind of weirdly candy-colored, like yellow and pink and aqua.
Is it like living in the Edward Scissorhands community, like on that street?
Kind of.
You know what I'm talking about?
Kind of, yeah, because it's the whole town was designed to look like your idea of like the town in the movie The Music Man or something, where everything's sort of like, you know, it's like oldie days, and there'll be a guy in a red and white striped jacket scooping up ice cream for the kids and that kind of a place.
That's fantastic. I have the cuts, by the way. Which is the first cut I'm playing there?
Disney
what is the
one.
What's the setup for it?
It's a resident who says that they still think it's a good place to live.
Detective,
you really.
Let's see. Right.
I don't know that there's many communities in the United States or the world where you could say, you know, something like this happens once every 15 years.
So what is the population of the town?
That I don't remember.
Because,
don't
again,
recall.
This is like the machete, crossbow, bolt, catapult, trebuchet, mace, jibbity-jibbity thing. That, you know, if it's a town of 500,000 people, then that's pretty impressive. If it's a town of four people, you know, and then there's a murder, that, you know, that puts you right up there with Detroit. So, all right.
This resident says the incidents are very unusual here.
You really do know all your neighbors. There's only 4,000 residences here. It's really that 1940s America all over again.
So that is a town. So it is.
Population's a little over 2,000.
2,000. So it is actually less than one tenth the size of my hometown. God damn. Imagine growing up in that place as a kid. That's the thing where we, I mean, that is why children do drugs, because they live in towns of 2,000 people. All right, so forth. There you go. You were listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don Taylor is at the news desk with this story.
I am. President Obama is in Afghanistan, according to ABC News, landing at the Bagram military base earlier today in a surprise visit. According to the Associated Press, he's there to personally thank troops for their service during the holidays.
I'm sorry, did you say that Minnie Pearl was in Afghanistan?
No, I know it sounded like that, but I said President Barack Obama.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm always confusing these. Is this Obama 1?
Yes. He says it reminded him of the sacrifice the troops are making every day.
It's tough business. Progress comes slow. There are going to be difficult days ahead. Progress comes at a high price.
I know that it's difficult to be the guy standing there, you know, at the military base, and you got the guys there that are either injured or wounded or whatever, that there's probably nothing you can say that doesn't seem just woefully inadequate. But it does seem like somebody somewhere in some speech writing office could come up with something better than it's a tough business. As you're talking to a guy who's like, you know, got an extra sleeve suddenly.
Yeah. He praised their efforts in a speech on Friday night.
I wanted to make sure that I could spend a little time.
A lil.
This holiday.
Lil Obama.
With the men and women of the finest fighting force that the world has ever known.
Oh, that's like when Meatloaf tells you you're the loudest audience you've ever, you know, he's ever heard or something.
Cleveland is my favorite city.
I'm just saying, I think the Romans might like to have a word with you about that.
Nobody knows how to rock like Pittsburgh. This is Obama's third trip to Afghanistan and his second since becoming president, although because of security concerns, his previous trip lasted only 6 hours. Obama arrived just in time for the latest WikiLeaks release on Afghan government corruption, which accused Afghan President Hamid Karzai of an inability to grasp the most rudimentary principles of state building. Because of bad weather, the White House has nixed plans for principals for Obama to have a working dinner with Karzai in Kabul. The visit comes only weeks after a Pentagon survey found that violence in Afghanistan had reached an all-time high.
I know we'll get to the WikiLeaks thing here in just a second, because I have so many questions about that. I'm not imagining that any of us, like, in this room are going to be able to answer it.
No.
But I just, the whole story is so perplexing to me. I guess I should hold off. I'll hold off on my observations about that until we get to that story. Coming up later on, entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. We get your stupid criminal of the week, taser watch, snuff watch, your religious nutcase watch, and Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with us to do another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today. The life, career, and legacy of Mr. Don Rickles. We'll also be joined by our good friend Lisa Wood of Big Ass Sandwiches, talking about the one-year anniversary of the opening of that fine food emporium, and they've got an event coming up for that. Well, we'll also have an installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today, we answer the question, why is it called Working Blue?
How will we ever cram all of that entertainment into one, like, 90-minute show?
Through magic.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, you and I are going to have to cut off one arm each so we have more room in the studio.
I don't use the left one that much.
Mainly magic, though. So that's all coming up next hour on the Rick Emerson radio program. You are listening currently to Legion of News at Cascadia.fm, brought to you by, among other people, Castalia Language Center. Find out more about them by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Clara Grebel, who is a native Spanish speaker of Argent, what, Don?
Titian.
Sure. Okay. She's here in Portland, now operating Castalia Language Center. They, Tinian sounds like the name of, like, the littlest elf in some sort of Disney production, you know? Or like, like in the Mickey Mouse Club or something, where they, you know, like Annette, Steven, Tinian.
Or like a French comic character or something.
Right. Yeah. So,
the Adventures of Tinian.
So, but he would be sort of a, like a constantly befuddled but really, really charming and quirky revolutionary. In any event, you can find out more about Castalia Language Center by going to PortlandSpanish.com. If you are an adult who laments, bemoans, rues the fact that you did not get an adequate Spanish education when you were in high school or college, it is probably because they were just teaching you in a method that involved rote memorization and regurgitation, which really leads to a whole lot of nothing as far as long-term retention of the language goes. So you find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com. They offer Spanish language classes for adults, and classes no larger than 8 people means you're going to get near individualized attention. Most importantly, I mean, sure, you'll be able to look more suave and sophisticated. You can impress perhaps the lady folk or your gentleman caller if you're able to order something in a separate language. You're able to act more continental in your appearance and tone and demeanor. But those things, you know, those are secondary and tertiary importance compared to the fact that you will be supporting this Legion of News, an award-nominated broadcast.
Indeed.
So, I mean, I'm just saying right there. That ought to be
nominated for a podcast award.
That's, you know, and I mean, how many people can say that? 5,000, 6,000? I mean,
yeah,
in Portland?
Just a couple of hundred.
I really, you know, it's a relatively honoring sort of.
Of all of the thousands and thousands of podcasts, we are in the very...
I'd say we're the top 80%.
Yeah, we're in the very elite top 80% by being nominated for this award.
And so that that kind of genius doesn't sustain itself. It requires folks like Castalia Language Center. So tell me, heard it here, if you would. You can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. Here is Don Taylor.
A new advertisement from a Plant City, Florida grocery store is causing some concern. The promotion basically offers to accept food stamps in exchange for cigarettes and beer. The ad offers beer and cigarettes for $1 for customers who use food stamps to purchase large quantities of meat. The store owner calls it a promotion, but some call it a loophole in the law. It's illegal to use food stamps to buy things like beer and cigarettes, but what's listed in the ad appears to be perfectly legal. The ad for the Price Buster Food Center in Plant City, and that's an awesome place to buy your food. I'm sure it's a place called Price Buster Food Center.
I think any place that ends in Buster that sells you expiration dated goods is probably to be not distrusted, but you might want to do some comparison shopping.
Anyway, the store offers large quantities of meat, such as 27 pounds.
Is that their slogan? We offer large quantities of meat.
Such as 27 pounds of beef for $60. At the very top of the ad, it reads, EBT and food stamps accepted, and if the customer pays just one extra dollar, they'll throw in cases of beer or cigarettes.
Now,
But wouldn't that be a money-losing proposition, though? Because you got to imagine that alcohol is more expensive. I mean, meat is not that dirt cheap, but it seems like meat is probably cheaper than booze.
I'm not sure.
Unless they're just giving you, I mean, unless it's just like bottom shelf. I mean, I know that Price Busters probably deals in only the finest merchandise. But
the beige cans of beer that just say beer on them.
It's not even the, like, it's not that Captain Morgan. It's, what is it? I swear to God, there's a thing called, just like, it's called Admiral Nelson.
Lieutenant Stinky.
You just find it on the very, at the very bottom shelf of the liquor store. There was that liquor store across from the KUFO building, and they stocked a lot of Admiral Nelson. And it was great because the bottles were all just covered in dust, indicating that, like, not even the winos wanted it. All right. Well, because you couldn't do that here, because the OLCC has real, like, strict regulations. In fact, I was at a Plaid Pantry about 3-4 days ago. There was a woman in front of me. This is why you suspect sometimes that society may just be trending downward ever so slightly, like in the overall. Woman in front of me at the Plaid Pantry, her and her two kids. And, the kids were clamoring, which she dealt with sort of endless loud bellows of, shut your head. So as she was there, she was, doing that thing of, like, looking at the money in her pocket, the actual cash. And then she also had, like, the Oregon Trail card or whatever. And she only had $1.49 left on her Oregon Trail card. So she was obliged to put some of her actual food back so that she would have then some more cash to buy the bottle of Boone's Farm wine that she was going
to
be washing that down with later on.
You have to prioritize.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And it's like if you don't get your children started on drinking right now, they'll never develop a tolerance for it. So,
well, when mommy's that broke and has to deal with children, mommy needs her Boone's Farm.
That's right.
In my house, it was my mother's Christmas bottle of Manischewitz Concord grape wine. That would sit on this back shelf in the cupboard, like behind the flour.
I thought Manischewitz was for our Hebrew friends and for their many rituals.
My mother loved Concord grape wine. I don't know why, because the thing is, normally she would just drink like rum and coke.
Uh-huh.
But every Christmas.
But on fancy days.
Every Christmas. I don't know why. Like, she thought it wasn't sold the rest of the year. Only at Hanukkah could you get the Manischewitz. I don't know.
Okay.
None of this makes any sense now that I'm an adult and I think about it. But I do know that every Christmas I would be like, oh, it's Hanukkah time. And my mother was like, excited because, like, hooray, I can buy the Concord grape wine.
I'm sure the Jewish population really appreciates the fact that they could enable your mother's alcoholism and that she associated one of their highest holidays with the ability to go get blitzed on cheap wine.
Pretty much.
All right. It would just be like if she decided to toast President's Day with, like, bottles of cooking sherry or something, like, for no reason.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome.
If she had thought of that, I'm sure she would.
Well, there's always the next life.
The airports in Madrid and on Spain's Balearic Islands in the Mediterranean closed suddenly this afternoon at the start of a long holiday weekend when air traffic controllers walked off the job. Hundreds of flights were delayed, stranding thousands of passengers at the airports in Madrid and at island airports at Palma de Mallorca, Menorca, and Ibiza, according to a spokeswoman. I don't think I'm saying Ibiza correctly.
Are you telling me this so that I avoid those airports if I'm trying to get somewhere this weekend?
Right.
Okay.
Well, it's just interesting because the air traffic controllers are massively abandoning their posts.
Right.
All throughout, like, Madrid. And these are among the two busiest airports in the country. They were likely to be especially busy this weekend. Monday and Wednesday are national holidays in Spain. So just thought you might find that interesting. Sometimes these things come across the transom. I have the little app for my iPhone, CNN Breaking News, and it seems to me, in the heat of the moment, oh my God, breaking news, this must be important.
This is like how yesterday that top
Madrid.
Five seemed like a great idea to me. Like when I was, when I was coming to work and I was getting it ready, the top five seemed like a glorious, fantastic idea. And then as soon as I heard the Cinderella song playing, I thought, I've chosen poorly today. Why am I doing this?
Oh. I was going to show you something on my phone, but I'll wait till the next hour because it's much more of a Rick Emerson thing than thing. I just want to tell you, though, I bought my first, like, completely stupid app that doesn't have any function really that's necessary whatsoever.
Excellent.
I Sam Jackson.
Okay. You've taken your first step into a larger world, Don.
Yes.
Here's Don Taylor at the news desk here at Legion of News.
The city of Fairview may soon have Oregon's next big tourist attraction. The regional government Metro has given permission to moor the super aircraft carrier USS Ranger at the Columbia River's Chinook Landing Marine Park indefinitely. The decommissioned aircraft carrier is part of a class of extra-large carriers built in the 1950s. It would become the world's largest floating museum. The ship is perhaps best known for its role in the movie Top Gun. Tuesday morning, Metro, the landowner of the park, announced that it's willing to allow the 90,000-ton Navy vessel to retire there. The ship is currently decommissioned in Bremerton, Washington. Fans have been trying for a decade to find a permanent retirement place for it. Fans of an aircraft carrier.
I was just going to say, I like the idea. I mean, that's the sort of thing that you could view as being, you know, like stupid or a waste of time or whatever. But it's kind of charming. It's sort of nice, actually.
Yeah.
I like the idea. Because, you know, those aircraft carriers, I mean, anything like that, any large ship, eventually they're just scrapped, you know, or they just sink them and make them into, you know, reefs or whatever. It's like, I like the idea that rather than just parting it out like an old horse, that there's fans who are going to find a long-term home for it. It's sort of sweet in a weird way.
Fairview Mayor Mike Weatherby, sounding a little bit like a guy from a...
Say Archie comic.
No, I wasn't actually thinking Archie comic. I was thinking of like a film, kind of like...
The Majestic?
Waiting for Guffman,
really.
Okay. All of a sudden, my brain just clamped up while I was trying to think of what to say. But anyway, he sounds like one of those kinds of characters when he says... Imagine living wage jobs, tourism, and national status as the largest floating museum in the world. Everyone would recognize the name Fairview, Oregon.
Okay, no, I totally get what you're going for there. That's the, we're going to demonstrate. It's like that guy in the Roger and Me documentary. He's talking about the slogan, Flint, Michigan, you'll love our new spark.
Yes.
And then he's like at the world's saddest press conference where he's got like a sparkler in his hand. I know exactly what you're going for. And so this would be in what? Fairview?
Fairview.
Fairview. And it's where?
In Oregon somewhere.
Okay.
Fairview
in Oregon somewhere.
It must not be very far away because Metro actually owns the land.
But we've talked about this before, that it's like you can live in the Northwest your entire life and not know how to pronounce everything and not know where everything is located. I mean, it's like I'm constantly... It's just, you know, it's like finding new rooms in your house all the time. That's sort of what being an Oregonian is like. There's always some tiny-ass town he never went to before. It just happened to, like, you know... I think I'd lived here for 15 years before I figured out where La Grande was.
Fairview is actually in Multnomah County, by the way.
Really?
Well, you know...
But it's not a city, then. It's just sort of... It must be just like a... Is it like a suburb? Or an annex?
It's actually located on the Columbia River when you're heading out towards Troutdale.
As I often am.
Yeah, so...
Okay. Oh, it's near Wood Village, somebody says.
It is near Wood Village.
All right.
Does that help?
No, not at all.
No. It's 3 football fields long, because we always measure things in how many football fields it is. And Fairview resident Bruce Norman says he doesn't really want it there because he says it's 3 football fields long and will completely block my entire view of Washington.
I love the idea of a guy looking out his bedroom window, by the way, where he's had a glorious view, and then there's just a wall of steel. There's just a huge boat blocking everything, like, forever.
The USS Ranger would serve as a museum, education center, emergency preparedness center... Because honestly, when the zombie apocalypse comes, there's got to be a better place than to be on an aircraft carrier.
I was just going to say, and refuge from the zombie apocalypse.
And it will offer 100,000 square feet of gathering space.
I mean, I'm telling you, you know, maybe zombies can walk underwater, maybe they can't. You're on an aircraft carrier, doesn't matter. By the way, apparently they want it in Wood Village because the only thing of note there is the old dog track. And that's how it was described in this email, the old dog track. So I have no idea if the old dog track still runs, if it's just a track for old dogs. I don't know if they got that thing from the Bugs Bunny cartoon where it's like an electronic rabbit that just waggles and sort of zooms around.
It's because like there was a new dog track somewhere else and then no one went to the old dog track anymore. Village had no industry.
The brand new bright and shiny Dubai dog track that reaches all the way to the clouds. Someone whose username is Third Prize You're Fired says, as a Jew... I find it... I'm going to start every sentence for the rest of the day, by the way, by just saying, as a Jew. As a Jew, I find it offensive that Manischewitz is kosher, but bacon is not. That is just plain wrong.
Oh, I agree.
No, that's one of those things where you wonder if maybe, like, if there was just some sort of a typo when God was communicating with the chosen people. You know what I mean? Like, if instead of bacon, if he just meant to say, like, Macon, Georgia. Like, you're not supposed to...
Right.
Macon. I disapprove of Macon. Because
Kevin Bacon. He wanted us to not... He was warning us against the scourge that would someday be Kevin Bacon.
And, I mean, if only we'd listened. But, you know, what are you going to do? Maybe next time. We could have avoided flatliners.
Oh.
Yeah.
Let's do our science news.
Here's Science on the March for Friday right here at Legion of News. By the way, the award nominated. Legion of News.
Jeff Japanese scientists have created a new kind of carbon-based rubber that can withstand extreme temperatures. This new super rubber could be used in everything from electricity-generating sneaker soles to spaceships traveling to distant moons.
For flying cars that hover high above our cloud cities.
Like foam earplugs or ordinary rubber, the new carbon nanotube rubber is part of a class of materials known as viscoelastic materials. These are materials that can be twisted, punched, rolled, kicked, stretched, and bent, yet return to their original shape. Unlike everyday conditions, these materials, under everyday conditions, these materials all work just fine. They protect delicate eardrums from loud noises and keep cars on the road. But if you freeze materials like foam earplugs or rubber with liquid nitrogen or expose them to high heat, they will either shatter on contact or melt. This new material doesn't shatter or melt, even under temperatures far, far beyond what rubber could endure. Yuri Gagatsky, a scientist at Drexel University who wrote an accompanying perspective in Science about the research, said, "Even at 1,000 degrees centigrade, when aluminum will melt and steel will soften, this new material keeps its shape."
So this is basically just the thing that, like, those kids have now with the bracelets that look like a little house or something, and then you stretch it out and you put it on your wrist.
Right, except that you could, like...
heat it to, like, 5 million degrees Kelvin.
Yeah, and it would still be a silly band.
Is there a... Is that what they're called?
They're called silly bands with a Z.
Where it's like, you know, yeah, it's like a dog or something, and then you put it around your wrist, yeah. And then it goes back to the dog shape.
And there's 7 million of them, and supposedly it's like, I'll trade you my...
Does
my,
one of them mean...
The one that looks like a bear for the one that looks like a car.
Does one of them, of course, mean that you have to, get a hump job from somebody out back, or...
Yeah, they basically all indicate how many blowjobs you've given.
It's Don Taylor who said that, by the way. Speaking of which...
I've just decided that myself, just now.
Next hour. Did I tell you that I was listening to Imus one time and he just said that? It's like right out of the, just like for, and no one just batted an eye at it. Like I was listening to Imus and it was during a commercial. He's like reading a commercial for like, I don't know, telling people to subscribe to like the Washington Post or something. And then just like right out with that. Next hour, we will have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's question, I kid you not, why is it called Working Blue? So we'll have the answer to that, today. Is there a real need, though, for, like, rubber that can be heated to that? I mean, is this like if you're going to be
I don't know if
traveling to the sun sometime in the near future?
Well, the thing is that, you know, there are a lot of restrictions, you know, on the things you could use the rubber and the polymers that we have currently because
right.
of things like that, the freezing temperatures and the heat and stuff. So in this case, it could be used, like, on spacecraft. It could be used in car shock absorbers because it's not going to, like, heat up and melt. So, yeah, and it could be an improvement on shirts and shoes. When you leave a shirt on the floor in the bedroom, you know, it creates a fold in it. It's wrinkled when you pick it up later. If you made, like, some sort of a thread with this polymer included in the thread, you could conceivably create fabric that would not wrinkle.
Don't they have polyester?
They do, but it's creepy.
Okay. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. If you want to get this program later on today, and I can't imagine that you don't. I mean, really. I mean, if you're hearing it once and it's funny, you hear it twice, it's hilarious. Three times, I mean, it's pure gold.
And you want to share it with others. Share it with your family over dinner.
Perhaps over some matzah.
During the holidays, you might want to, like, gather around the fire and listen to old episodes of Legion of News.
Just warming a bottle of Manischewitz over the flames. By the way, that guy followed up. He said, hey, my Hanukkah gift of hearing my online moniker read aloud by none other than Rick Emerson is the best gift ever. There you go.
Wow. He must have gotten some very sad Hanukkah gifts over the years.
You have low standards, my friend. But that is Rick Emerson's mitzvah to you. So, there you go.
Oh, are we? Okay. The twinkling stars in the sky are a lot denser. Denser beyond our imagination. Need a reverb sometimes for things I say.
Wait, hold on. Right. Hold on a second. They're what, Don?
Denser beyond our imagination. That was good. A new study reveals that there are 10 or 20 times the number of stars in some parts of the universe than previously estimated. This tells that there could be as many 300 sextillion stars. That is a 3 with 23 zeros after it. I actually counted the zeros so I could say that.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
As I thought maybe you might want to know how many zeros that was.
Okay.
23.
Do you feel like that was wasted effort now because I didn't ask?
No.
You feel like you had to use it anyway?
Because I think maybe the listeners were wanting 300 sextillion. How many is that? Well, there you go. That's 300 with 20 more zeros after it. That's how many stars there may be in the universe. 3 times the earlier estimate of 100 sextillion. The study led by Yale University astronomer Peter von Duckham estimates that there could be far more red dwarfs and in the elliptical-shaped galaxies and in turn in the universe than previously thought. Other astronomers don't like it, as von Dokken's findings contradict their earlier assumptions. The universe is more complicated when they think. They are pondering at the moment.
So is this one of those things where he's caused like some huge upset in the world of science and he's not going to be invited to any of the good parties over something that I don't really understand and that I couldn't possibly fathom if you gave me an infinite amount of time in which to ponder it?
Van Dokken. Oh, yeah. He's the guy who said there's more stars.
Mr. 306 Dillion. Hey, let me ask you this. I don't really know what a red dwarf actually is.
I don't either.
I mean, I think a white dwarf is a collapsed star. And I don't know if there's a black dwarf. I think a black dwarf is a black hole. But I could be wrong about that. I think a white dwarf is a collapsed star, so I don't know what unless maybe a red dwarf is a star that is on the verge of collapsing. Maybe it's like it's sort of supernova-ing.
I think a red dwarf is the kind of star that makes Superman evil.
No. No. There is. You're thinking of red Krypton, which I think actually only affects insects.
Oh.
There is a kind of kryptonite, by the way, that only affects insects and plants, I swear to God.
Really?
Yes.
I love science.
Yeah. That's not really science, by the way. Just FYI. I mean, it's all well and good that you say that here in this room, but I don't want you going out in the world and saying that. Well, you know, like, I could just see you at a Christmas dinner sort of trying to impress somebody, you know, that has a degree in something. It's just like how red kryptonite only affects insects and plants and how gold kryptonite removes its powers permanently, which is also true, by the way.
Well, on Smallville, somebody put a piece of red kryptonite in Clark's class ring, and he put it on, and he turned into evil Clark Kent.
Well, no, so maybe it is red kryptonite that turns him evil, because there's blue. I used to know all of these things, and for reasons that I now can't explain at all, like even in some sort of nerd context, there's no reason why I would need to know this.
The green kryptonite makes him all weak and
it, but,
sad.
But it doesn't kill him, it just enfeebles him, but it's
right.
Temporary. Whereas gold kryptonite removes his powers permanently. I do believe, then it must either be blue or white kryptonite that affects only plants or animals.
Okay.
All right. It doesn't. Let's forget we had this entire conversation.
Of course, they've made up a whole other bunch of stuff, you know, on Smallville that is completely different.
Well,
like right now, he's like hanging out with a Green Arrow, and ostensibly he's still only like 20 years old, and they live in, you know.
So a Smallville like
I
that.
I don't know what's going on.
It's anymore. Like that Florida town with the circus freaks, except this one is just like it's nascent superheroes.
Yeah, pretty much everybody passes through Metropolis now and has some kind of encounter. With Clark in
also,
some manner. And he still isn't Superman. And by the way, the guy, Tom Welling's like 40 years old, and he's still like young Clark Kent and hasn't even turned into Superman yet.
Doesn't the whole thing about there being a lot of different kinds of kryptonite to affect different things from Krypton indicate that whole thing about Superman being the last son of Krypton is just inaccurate?
Well, they must have all been very weak and sick all of the time if there was all this stuff on their planet that would, like, do these horrible things to them.
No, I can explain that, but it's it has to do with... Never mind. It's, I won't do so now. I'll explain it later. So,
By the way, he's also battling Zod in this season of Smallville.
I apologize, by the way, to everyone who understands science that this conversation is happening inside the Science on the March portion of the program.
Let's go back to actual science.
Okay.
The discovery of a strange bacteria that can use arsenic as one of its nutrients widens the scope for finding new forms of life on Earth and possibly beyond. While researchers discovered the unusual bacteria here on Earth, they say it shows that life has possibilities beyond the major elements that have been considered essential. According to Wired magazine, the groundbreaking experiment began by collecting bacteria from the super salty Mono Lake in California. Scientists gradually deprived some of the bacteria of phosphate, long considered one of the six elements essential for life, and substituted with arsenic, a chemically similar element. The bacteria should have died, but instead it appears to have successfully incorporated the arsenic into its cellular structure. It continued reproducing, doubling in size every 2 days. Lead researcher Felisa Wolf-Simon says the discovery is a huge key to finding life on other planets.
This is life. Hold on a second.
This will inform us about life on our own planet, and it will help inform us of life. We will find it one day elsewhere in the universe.
She sounds really tentative about this whole thing.
Yeah.
It's like she's not really confident in what she's saying. She lacks the panache and the verve of let's say like a.
The biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
She would do well to study at the knee of William Barucki.
Until now, every known organism has required phosphate, the backbone of the DNA double helix, and the P in ATP to survive. But this bacteria appears to have solved the challenge of being alive in a different way. Simon explains the bacteria has a substitution in its basic DNA form.
This microbe substitutes arsenic for phosphorus in its basic biomolecules. And what else might we find? What else might we want to look for?
Is she reading this as some sort of a presentation to five-year-olds?
She lacks the passion of Borecki.
We need to look through these candidates with ground-based telescopes and find out which are really planets and which aren't.
There you go. There's William Borecki. Well, this is like that thing where they felt that the extreme temperatures of one form or another, either very low or very high, would preclude the existence of life, and that, you know, there could be no chemical-based life. And then they just found all that stuff living on the ocean vents.
Yeah.
You know, and they found, here's the weird thing. They found these, they're like a tube worm sort of a thing, but they live on the ocean vents. And the thing about the ocean vents is they're, you know, the water immediately, you know, next to the ocean vents is incredibly hot. It's like 100, and, you know, it's like 190 degrees Fahrenheit or something. Something far above like what they thought things could live at. But then if you get away from the ocean vents even just a few inches, the water goes down to like, you know, it goes down to like 34 degrees or something. And they found some bizarre creature that actually is big enough that it straddles the distance and it can actually live in both temperatures simultaneously.
Nice.
And then it just like... And also, you know, it doesn't actually require, you know, it doesn't require anything except, chemical interaction to live. It just feeds on chemicals and sulfur, which they never thought was possible either. So I just sort of assume now whenever they say, well, it's impossible for life to exist in conditions outside of blah, 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 that they don't know what they're talking about, or that they will just have to reverse themselves.
By the way, I have a new favorite animal. My favorite animal up until recently was the meerkat, because I was just quite... fascinated about your meerkats, but I've been watching a lot of Discovery Channel, and there's this show about this guy who's a photographer, and he goes out in nature and takes lots of pictures of things, and I have now decided my new favorite animal is the Arctic snow monkey.
Because
there's those monkeys that live where it's like super, super frigid, cold, and snowing like all the time, but they have adapted to live like around these hot springs. So they spend, like, most of their time just sitting in the hot springs.
Just chilling.
Like they're hanging out in a sauna. And even when it's, like, snowing on their heads, they're just like, ah, this is nice. And the steam's coming off the hot springs. And they're just, and just all of these monkeys just in the sauna just going, hey, how you doing?
Like they're at a 70s keychain party.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, somebody got the hors d'oeuvres? I could use some more wine,
yeah,
too. Thanks, that's awesome.
They're my favorites.
Excellent. Good for you. I'm glad you have a new, Hey, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Where do squirrels live during the winter?
I don't know. I really don't know. I have wondered that myself. I've wondered that about certain kinds of birds, too, because I know there are birds who fly south for the winter, but there are a lot of birds who don't.
Yeah, and squirrels can't go south. I mean, they can't, you know, the feet are way too short to reach the petals.
I know that in my house that I no longer own, that was 100 years old, in the wintertime, squirrels would move into the... empty space in the roof above my kitchen.
Yeah, see, that probably is true because there's, you know, there's any number of cracks and crevices and human structures that they can move into. I asked somebody this a few weeks ago, I'm like, where do squirrels go in the winter? Because it's like they don't all die because then there would be no squirrels come,
right,
you know, come spring, and they don't, you know, it's not like the eggs or, you know, whatever, like they gestate or whatever for that long. So they got to go somewhere. And it's like, and he said that he gave one of those answers that is meant to just make the question go away, because if you don't think about it at all, like, it'll make sense. He goes, well, they live in knot holes in trees. And then he just went about his business. That's a fundamentally absurd response. So I will figure it out at some point. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Is that the end of science for today?
Yeah, I believe that's enough science.
There's the end of your science news, which was brought to you by...
Science and Kryptonite News.
Squires Electric. SquiresElectric.com is how you can find out more about Squires Electric. You can also call them at 503-252-1609. It's entirely possible that Joe Squires can tell you, about kryptonite. Probably not. But you know what? Baseball cards, yes. He can tell you a lot about that Honus Wagner rookie card,
really?
I would imagine. Yeah, because he's, you know, that's like his thing. You've been in the office that he's got where it's like he's got the whole collectible card thing going on everywhere. He's the one who conjured up those new kids on the block trading cards for Sarah.
That's right.
Which I think a friend of his at like some convention had given him as a gag. In any event, 503-252-1609 is the number for Squires Electric. You can also contact them again via their website at SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with electrical wiring or wiring of any kind in your home or your business, whether it just is maintenance, whether it's repairing, updating, installing, if you're going to be expanding, maybe come next spring, you're going to be putting another room on your house, you're going to be moving from one office to two offices, three offices, or you're just going to be, you know, you're going to be adding more equipment. You want to make sure that the wires can handle not only the internet traffic, but also the electrical draw that's going to come in there as well. Don't screw with that science yourself. You stand back. Let professionals do that. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up next hour with your stupid criminal of the week, taser watch, snuff watch, your religious nutcase watch, top five comedy humor, humor me, comedy 101 with Mr. Big Jim Willig. Today we'll talk about Don Rickles and also pop culture authority. Why is it called Working Blue? Anyway, this is Don Taylor.
I will share this later because now's the time for this, but I just got a link from a listener, George, who is fond of sending me many news stories that he knows I will find interesting. And the title of this news story, the headline is merely, "The Platypus Knows 80 Different Ways to Poison You."
Thanks, George. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay.
The trustee in charge of recovering the Madoff funds is suing J.P. Morgan for $6.4 billion, charging that the bank played along with the Ponzi scheme that cost victims billions. Irving Picard filed suit in New York yesterday, hoping to claw back some of the vast sums lost via financier Bernie Madoff's machinations. J.P. Morgan was willfully blind to the fraud, even after learning about numerous red flags surrounding Madoff, said David Sheehan of Baker & Hostetler, the lawyer for the trustee. Sheehan said that J.P. Morgan, Madoff's bank of choice for two decades, was at the very center of that fraud and thoroughly complicit in it, and that the bank should pay the price for its central role in enabling Madoff's fraud. J.P. Morgan says it will contest the allegations and that Picard's suit distorted the facts.
I love the idea that that guy stole $5 billion, though. Like, you wonder at what point, what was the line of demarcation where he was just like, well, I mean, you know, where it became like you're walking through the forest, and once you're halfway in, you might as well continue because it's an equal, you know, yeah. it's even further to get back out.
I like, my favorite part of stories like this is always when somebody finally, like, gets a chance to talk to the wife.
Right.
And Bernie Madoff's wife is such a prime example of the wives in these situations. Her response was essentially, why should I have to give back any of my money?
Right.
I didn't know what he was doing.
I had no idea. Yeah.
Like, really? You had no idea where all that money was coming from?
I mean, it's just...
not a clue.
You got to give it up to the guy for, you know, he's not just stealing like 10 bucks or taking a bagel without putting a dollar in the honor box or something. I mean, it's $5 billion. I mean, it's just an absurd, it's an unfathomable amount of money. He really is a supervillain when you think about it.
It's like he came up with some kind of a scheme that was like that idea they had in Office Space.
Right.
Where if we just like add a half a penny to each thing, just round it up, then it'll end up being like billions of dollars.
And when it
somehow
worked.
Somehow he did that.
And it probably just seemed like when he passed like a billion and a half, he probably thought to himself, well, this is really wrong and likely to get me in some sort of trouble later. But how can I not continue this? It's too awesome to turn off. I mean, if you found a way to steal like $1 billion a year and it seemed like nobody was figuring it out, wouldn't you be tempted just to run up the tally as high as you possibly could just to see?
See, I would be so afraid of being caught. That's my problem, is that I don't have much in the way of like a capacity for guilt. But I do have a fear of getting caught and being like humiliated and punished.
Sure.
So there's a point at which I would just go, I think I will just take all the money I've got now and stop and hope no one notices.
Go live in a treehouse.
But guys like Madoff are the kinds of criminals that they just go, well, looks like no one's going to catch me.
Right. Well, and don't you, I sort of take it as an article of faith with that guy. If they have $5 billion or whatever of theft that they know about, I figure there's like another 12 probably hidden in some overseas account. And he's going to get a jingle. Oh, yeah, jail. Yeah, that sucked. Well, I'm glad I'm all rehabilitated now. I got to go to the airport. Bye. And then you're just never going to see that guy again. And the next time you see him, he's going to be, sitting with his feet in the white sands of some beach you've never heard of. And his name is going to be Hector. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Referees at a Washington State football tournament game are getting a lot of criticism for the unsportsmanlike conduct, a penalty they received this week. Running back Ronnie Hasty pointed to the sky to thank God for his touchdown and was immediately hit with a flag. Mike Colbrisi runs the state's high school athletics body and says the ref's decision definitely wasn't a slam at the student's religion.
The point is to make sure the game goes on, something that happens after a score or after a spectacular play, whatever, doesn't slow down play itself.
Now, I know we're not, you know, we're not much in the way of sports fans here, you and I, but this is pretty interesting because I am aged. I am old enough to remember when it was legal to spike the ball in football, for example, like in the NFL. And then they, it was, I don't know, maybe around like 87, 88 that they actually made that, it became a penalty. It was unsportsmanlike conduct. It was showboating.
Well, yeah, it wasn't just, but it started out with spiking, and then it started out with like doing a little dance. Spiking. And then it turned out to like, it became just like any, like, you know, touchdown, like just stand in the end zone for like 10 minutes and do some choreographed routine. And finally, they just went, enough. Okay, enough. No. You don't get to do that anymore.
Just sort of meticulously planned line dance with you and your teammates.
Hasty says he's not mad that he was hit with the flag, but he doesn't understand why it happened.
I've done it every time I've gotten in the end zone, and no one's ever said anything about it, so it's just something I've done as tradition.
The other interesting thing about this is if they're hitting the guy with a penalty, not because it's, you know, because it's boasting or it's unsportsmanlike or whatever, if their rationale is that it's just a delay of game penalty, in effect.
Yeah.
And yes, I am equally surprised that I'm talking about sports, so let's just all get over that at the same time. But if that's the rationale, is that it is a de facto delay of game penalty, then you got to wonder about all those guys who have the free throw rituals that they do. Like Karl Malone was just full of those.
Oh, yeah.
Every time he would get up and he would have, you know, guys have to bounce the ball a certain number of times. And who is it? Is it the guy from the Blazers that does the thing about touching his face three times and it's one time for each of his kids? And Malone had a thing where he had like a little mantra or whatever he would say before he got up there.
And I think there actually are penalties for delay of game in basketball if those things take too long. If you decided that you had to bounce the ball like 20 times, like, you know, 10 times in each hand, you know, and then stand on one foot and rub your head or something, they'd be like, no, okay, then they, you know, you would definitely get a penalty.
They'll list all the begats from Ezekiel.
Yeah.
Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday. Right here at the award-nominated Legion of News at Cascadia.fm.
In a candid interview with The Guardian, Simply Red's Mick Hucknall apologized for the 1,000-odd groupies he says he betted in the 1980s.
I was so hoping he was going to apologize for existing in the first place, or ever singing, or forming a band.
He admitted to years of craziness and a three-a-day sex habit, and took the opportunity to issue a startling apology to the legions of fans he slept with.
Die. Die.
I regret the philandering, he said. Ugh. In fact, can I issue a public apology? They know who they are, and I'm truly sorry. Between 1985 and 1987, I would sleep with about three women a day, every day. I never said no. This was what I wanted from being a pop star. I was living the dream, and my only regret is that I hurt some really good girls. Still, he managed to rack up an impressive list of famous girlfriends, including Catherine Zeta-Jones and Helena Christensen.
Are you kidding me?
No.
I don't even find Catherine Zeta-Jones, like, you know, like, all that sexy. I mean, she's an attractive woman, but I don't find her all that sexy.
But she's
still
definitely out of his league.
Yeah, but still, that guy.
Yeah.
This is simply the holding back the years.
Yeah, the guy with the big, frizzy red hair.
If you don't know me by now.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate him. And here's, let me just say this, and I've hated him since day one. I hated him since the first time I heard that song. You know, And I think we all understand that when the guy apologizes for stooping 1,000 women, that, you know what that is, Don? No pun intended. That's a little spike in the ball is what that is. That's showboating. It's not like kneeling for half a second and pointing at the clouds.
I feel really terrible that I got laid so much when I was a pop star.
Ugh.
Academy Award winner Jeremy Irons is dropping into Law & Order Special Victims Unit to guest star as a sex therapist. A spokeswoman for the NBC crime drama said Friday that Irons' character runs a sex addiction clinic in the episode to be filmed later this month. It's set to air in early 2011. Series executive Neil Baer said he's elated to work with an actor of Irons' caliber. The British actor received an Oscar for Reversal of Fortune. He won an Emmy for the 2005 HBO miniseries Elizabeth One.
It's funny, I was going to ask if he was going to play somebody creepy, but before he even had a chance to query you about that, you went right to the playing a sex therapist.
Therapist at a sex addiction clinic.
Okay.
Aretha Franklin says her surgery was highly successful and thanks well-wishers for their prayers. In a statement released yesterday to the Associated Press, the Queen of Soul said, "God is still in control. I had superb doctors and nurses who were blessed by all the prayers of the city and the country." She still didn't say what she was being treated for.
She never actually said what the procedure was, right?
No.
Okay.
We still don't know.
What if she came out and she had like an ear on the end of her nose or something?
Or a sex change
yeah.
at the age of 68.
Or just like on one leg, just like a second knee, you know, for no reason. I was going to go right to the penis, by the way, and I didn't. I'm glad you were there to pick up the slack the penis slack,
somebody,
as it were.
Somebody has to pick up the penis.
Slack.
Failed senatorial candidate Christine O'Donnell won't be continuing her media career with Fox, but she will be doing it in print. She announced in a gleeful Twitter statement this week, "You heard the spin about the 2010 elections. It's time to set the record straight and move forward. Signed a book deal with St. Martin's Press."
Of course she did.
In a later statement, she described the midterm elections as the first rumblings of a revolution that is not fully erupted, adding, "I plan on making my book one of the revolution's catalysts."
Okay.
No details have been released about the possible titles or how much she's getting paid, but the book will take the reader behind the scenes of her race for Senate and embody O'Donnell's identification with America's frustrations and concerns with the current political climate.
Yes, you're welcome, whoever wrote the press release that we just read as though it were an actual news story.
Yes, well, you know. Robert Pattinson and his Twilight co-star Kristen Stewart have revealed how they ended up shooting a sex scene for 12 hours. According to a new report...
The Simply Red guy was there.
They were coached by Sting. America's Life and Style magazine says the duo shot a sex scene for their film Breaking Dawn that took them half a day to complete. The scene shows Pattinson's vampire character Edward biting into a pillow in order to control his urge to bite Bella.
He's a pillow biter. Really?
Yes.
An actual pillow biter.
Yes.
Well done.
Rob, 24, recently admitted he gets really carried away when he has to kiss 20-year-old Kristen. "When we start the kissing scenes, I forget we're surrounded by a load of people. I actually end up getting really carried away. It's only when the kiss is finished that my mind registers as actually a set full of people around, and I just walk away embarrassed."
Oh, because they're actually dating, right? Isn't that the thing?
Apparently, yeah.
I never saw the third film. What is the third one? Is it Eclipse?
Yeah.
So
it's actually less awful than the other two, but the big problem is that it still comes from Stephanie Meyer's source material.
There's no saving that.
No, you just can't save that.
No.
The movie itself, though, is as competently made as it possibly could be, given the circumstances.
I thought the second one was actually far better than the first one.
The third one's even better than that. I mean, it really was well made. It's a well made film.
I mean, it's not like I would ever see it again, but. So Cheryl and Lara dragged me to see. I don't even know how I ended up going to. I don't know why they didn't just go by themselves. I don't know why I had to be there. Anyway, maybe it was just to see if I would. And then like Cheryl presented us with Team Edward, like hand towels or something beforehand that she'd won or made or stitched out of alpaca hair or something. Anyway, so I went to see. New Moon or whatever the second one. And this, I actually, I really liked the way it looked. Like that whole. What are they called? The Valturi guys, the Roman, the Papal Council or whatever. The Amber Dakota Fanning was there. Like, I thought that whole thing was actually really cool looking. I wish there'd been. I'd watch a whole movie of that just to see, like, you know, like a whole movie about vampire politics or something.
Yeah. The thing about Eclipse was interesting is that, like I said, it was as competently made as it could be under the circumstances. I have no desire to actually, you know, continue reading the series. I tried to read the first one and just threw it across the room in horror and disgust that I had done that to my brain. But the story just has gotten so much more insane
right.
as it's gone along. By the time that New Moon that you're actually watch, I was actually watching this film and going, no. Seriously? No.
All right, now I'm going to ask you. Now, this might be a spoiler for anybody who's, so you know, just if you don't want to be spoiled for whatever. Now, is the third one, is Eclipse where she becomes a vampire? Because she eventually does. Sorry.
I think that happens at the very, in the last book.
Okay, in the last one, Breaking Dawn, she becomes
because
a vampire.
Because I know kind of the general plots of these, even though I haven't read them.
Right.
Because I know in Breaking Dawn, they get married and she wants to have sex with him while she's still human.
Right.
And so she does, and then she gets pregnant, and then there's apparently the horrific birthen scene of the vampire child.
And is that the thing that she then made into a novella?
I guess.
Because Stephanie Meyer came out with that novella once.
And I guess also as soon as the baby is born, Jacob looks at it and realizes that the baby is imprinting on him, and it's like, that's his mate.
Oh, yeah, that is in the fourth book. Lara told me that she was horrified by the whole idea that he was basically, like, pinned to some baby girl that was, like, 3 months old or something.
And how Mormon is that?
Very. Yeah. All right, we have to end this. I will say that this program is brought to you by ChristmasMountainTrees.com, ChristmasMountainTrees.com, and we're going to be again tomorrow from noon, I'm sorry, from 9, rather, from 9 a.m. Yes. till 11 a.m. Find out driving directions and details about Christmas Mountain Trees by going to that website. It's ChristmasMountainTrees.com. You can also go to their Facebook page, Facebook.com/ChristmasMountain. They're a family farm. They've been there for 3 generations, going on 4, and they are open Wednesday through Friday, 10 to 4:30, Saturday, Sunday, 9 to 4:30, all the way until December 19th. So you go there, or you're getting your Christmas tree as part of an overall experience. It really is. You can go there and have an entire day of it, and there's several hours anyway with your family where you can go and look at 85,000 trees and find the one that is going to be perfect for your house. And then you sit by a roaring fire while the guy kind of gets the tree and takes the needles off and wraps it and puts it in your car. And it's going to be one of those things that you can look back on literally or figuratively with your children for years to come. Isn't that right, Dawn?
That's right. And tomorrow at 9 a.m., you and I will be there riding around in the wagon and
maybe
we picking out our own trees and drinking the cider and doing all that
maybe
stuff.
We should rent some children just for the occasion.
We could. Or midgets and dress them as children.
That's Dawn Taylor who said that, by the way. All right, and we're done. This brings to a conclusion another episode of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. By the way, that's the award-nominated Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back again Monday at noon. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemerson.com. Have a safe and satisfying weekend, won't you please?